HubZero.org, a platform for scientific collaboration.
Well, welcome today. My name's Joe Sykos. I'm the production manager for online content for NanoHub. So it's a pleasure to be here with you. This is the first HubHub I've been to. So today I'd like to kind of just take you through what our production process looks like. And currently on the NanoHub, we're focused on two delivery formats, video and a newly introduced about a year or so ago, HTML5-based format. This format replaced our usage of Breeze we had earlier. The video formats are available also on iTunes U and YouTube. And the fundamental difference between these two methods of access to content is the video is primarily you download it, walk away, and play it. And the HTML5 is more interactive, but you're still tethered to the NanoHub in this case. YouTube kind of bridges both of these because we found out we can actually implement table of contents. And so while it's most people who look at YouTube are watching it in a linear fashion, we found that the table of contents can allow you to jump around the talk much the same way you can do with the HTML5. Here's what the journey has looked like for us. So in August 2002, we did our first video presentation. And this was literally videotaping the speaker. In this case, it was Mark Lundstrom. And then making this available through the NanoHub. In 2004, we started working with Adobe Breeze. This product is now called Adobe Connect. The history of that is it came to Adobe via way of Macromedia. When Adobe purchased Macromedia, and I can't remember the company it was before Macromedia had acquired them. So that's kind of the history of the Adobe Connect product in 10 seconds. We introduced our first course to the NanoHub in 2004. That was Dada's Fundamental of Nanoelectronics. And then in March 2006, spring break, we decided to do an experiment. The experiment was to see if we can bring Hollywood production tools to the NanoHub and produce lectures and course content using those tools. So we centered around Final Cut and the goal was to see what we could produce. One of the things that kind of I was always concerned with was kind of the quality when you're looking at video, was the quality of the slide content. And so we really focused on that. The other thing is it was always kind of a rough go getting the audio to be clean, in the, prior to, methods we're using. And that's one of the key components, I think, for successful online content is that the audio be very clear and understandable. So that prototype took on. We did one of Gerhard Klemek's talks, Band Structure to Nanoelectronics. I don't know if you ever have been through one of Gerhard's talks. There are typically about 200-some animation steps in one of his presentations. So we took on the most difficult presentation we could find. We also did James Heath's Nanosystems Biology. It was a popular presentation that he had given when he was at Purdue. And then Rashid Bashir had done a four-lecture short course on BioMEMS and bio-nanotechnology, and that was kind of what our prototype was. That all worked out pretty well. And our first podcast course then was Shilayev's Nanophotonics. In 2008, we moved to iTunes U. And then in July 2010, we began to start putting stuff onto YouTube. Also, at the same time, we had gotten feedback from our user community. They would really like to see the speaker in the videos. And we had gone with a side-by-side format there where the slides is in one panel and video of the speakers in another panel and took on an HD size. So 640 by 360 there you can see is the size. Fall 2011, we began to start doing our first HTML5 work. The last course to use Breeze was Mark Lundstrom's course, and the first course that was HTML5 only also happened that semester, and that was Leary's Engineering Nanomedical Systems. And then finally, in January 2012, we released our first NanoHub U courses using these formats. The process in 2006 looked something like this. My clock's not running there, okay. And this is how we began here with the video capture and going directly into Breeze. Then we added in 2006, we added the video editing phase, which became Centric. All audio now went through a cleanup process, and really the video editing became the center of production. Everything was driven off of that. We could also do DVDs. Here's the team back in 2006. The person on the left, Ben Owens, was the person who did the prototyping of the first podcasts. The other two students to my right and left were primarily doing Breeze production work back then. The process today looks something like this. Again, the editing is in the center. We've added now in the HTML5 processing. We use a package that will be presented tomorrow, kind of what we call the consumer version of this, to do slide extractions and also to do timing work and to prepare the content that needs to be uploaded to NanoHub for HTML5 presentation. Our editing process looks something like this. This is a screenshot of Final Cut. As you can see, there's a timeline. We drop in literally static images of the slides. If there's movie animations, we drop those in too. But this is how we get the quality. These are been captured at high resolution, and they're dropped on the timeline. And we set markers for where the slide transitions are. On the bottom kind of two channels there, you'll see these little spikes hanging down. That's our little transition tone that you hear when the speaker advances to a new slide. Here's the progression, just to show you the progression of podcast formats. We started out with 320 by 240. In about 2009, we started experimenting with picture in picture. Again, the desire to have some presentation of the speaker in there. This was a lot of work. I literally took notes, editorial notes, and when I did the video, I was the one who did the videotaping, and I took editorial notes of when we should put the speaker up and not. And then this is our current format with the side-by-side. By the way, all these images are in actual size, so you can see the clarity we get from the slides. Our audio cleanup process looks something like this. We started out doing a lot of filtering and stuff. We moved on to that and have pretty much gone with just noise reduction and compression to get the level consistent and maybe do a little level boosting. And then we go in and hand edit any kind of coughs and questions that might happen. The question volume usually is lower. We have to boost that a little bit so you can at least here's a question of somewhat going on. I'm going to fire up a short demo here.
Here that if you're looking for, let's say, for the field at time, a particular time t, it depends only on the task.
Here's the cleaned up version.
If you're looking for, let's say, for the field at time, a particular time t, it depends only on the task.
Okay, good. Does anybody have anything now that we're
this example, there's a lawnmower outside.
Yeah. Okay, good. Does anybody have anything now that we're started? Does anyone have anything they want to add to that? Yeah.
Okay. And in this last case here, we had the microphone, the wired microphone, that the wireless microphone they normally wear fail. And so we had to use the microphone on the camera.
Okay. So thanks for the introduction. I'm a professor in the Materials Engineering School and just got here about a year ago. My specialty is in using electronic ion microscopies.
So I hope this example here just kind of hits in the importance of getting the audio right, and that makes a big difference in the end. Moving on now from the video editing to the HTML5 production. The Hub Presenter is a module in Hub Zero provides, and this is kind of what the interface looks like. And to control where you are in the presentation, you have two ways of handling that. You got a general slider, which covers the entire video from start to finish. And if you're more interested in what's going on in a specific slide, you can move the slider around here. You can see slide 10 has been highlighted. I'll point to it really quickly. And you can move that slider around. It gives you that resolution within the specific slide. It's very hard to do that from the global general slider. There's also a thing that you can't quite see here in there, but in the lower left corner, there's a little thing you can click on at any time, and it'll give you a link. We haven't implemented anything with this yet, but it'll give you a spot right in the talk that you can go to. And so I hope to, in the future, look at actual developing learningware, lessonware, where you can take the person right to the spot in the talk that they need to review that content. So we do have that capability. Much like YouTube, you can still get the hash timing as part of the URL, which will take them right to a specific spot in the video. Chris Smoke with the Hub Zero team implemented the player side of this. Now, to work with this, we implemented something we call nano wind, and sometimes we just call it wind. It kind of replaced the breeze thing, which allows us to take the timing that we get from Final Cut and a reference video and the PowerPoint file, and then thereby create the HTML5 content needed. One of the transition times come from Final Cut, so we don't have to worry about that. In the consumer version tomorrow, you'll actually be able to set those yourself. But one of the things we always do is we clean up the table of contents, because quite often we get PowerPoints and a text box at the top does not a title make. And so we have to go in and clean that up. And here you can see, just a quick example. There's some untitled slides there, and we have ways of going easily setting those slide titles. This takes us to the next step, where we just do the publishing, and it cranks out a zip file with all the content needed, which is an the inventory of that is basically there's a video in the three required formats, MPEG-4, WebM, and OGV. For the reference video, that is the video of the instructor speaking, there's images of all the slides, including all the animation steps. And then there's a JSON file, which ties it all together and lets the presenter module know how to present it to the user. I'm going to give you a quick little demo of this, what this process looks like. I'm going to just let this video play. I'm going to take you through it right now, and I'm going to, hopefully it's moving. Yep, okay, great. So up at the very top there, we have created a project. We're now selecting the reference video. And now we're going to select the XML timing, which came from Final Cut. And another part of this is to ask where the slides are. And here's the slides that were captured earlier. Where's my video at? Oh yeah, we moved around there. There we go. And now we're in here, we're gonna edit the table of contents a little bit. These are the slide titles. See here, I'm just going to select that one. I have a pull down that shows all the text available from the slide. And let's shorten this to just lecture 5.1. So this is through the dialog box. We can also just use the pull-down menu and go right to the content, right to the desired slide title, or we can automatically generate titles where it takes a best guess at what the title should be. We can control the title for the project. Here we have a couple projects going. These are all the NanoHub U ones. I set it to the AFM Part 2 course. And then we go right off into publishing. I did a pre-check to make sure all the content is properly ready to go for publishing. And you are literally watching me do this in real time. I did not shorten this at all. So, it took me 2.5 minutes to run through and do the HTML5 production. Now, this is a 20-minute talk, a longer talk, especially if the titles were all untitled and stuff like that. We would have, have taken longer, but we get pretty good rapid turnaround. And the bulk of our work happens at the... I think we're almost done. Yeah, we're just finished. I'll come back to the bulk of work. I can also now reinsert the titles back into PowerPoint, because one of the things we do is you can see it up at the very top, we insert the title and move it off screen so we don't disturb the content of the slide. But this way, when we create the PDF, the table of contents in the PDF is correct. It's just another one of those details that we pay attention to in the end. And, with this process, I should go back. I'll mention that the bulk of our work happens in that Final Cut project. So for like an hour-long lecture, our total processing time is about 5 hours for editing and capturing and, things that we have to do. The more complicated the talk, the longer it gets. But for the most part, it's about 5 to 6 hours per hour of lecturing. But I've always looked at, I compete with the rapid turnaround, capture the video and dump it up for the students. Those usually are for classes of something up to 30 in size. Sometimes it might be a large class of 200 or so. I start thinking there's going to be 1,000 students working with my material. So that's why we put the effort into it. Let me now wrap up. The chart on the left shows the number of users of NCN at Purdue produced content, and all the way on the right edge is approaching 100, it's 120 some thousand users in the last year have used a piece of our content. The red line kind of represents the growth of content going from about 50 when this chart starts, up to almost 1,500 items today. This doesn't, of course, happen in a vacuum. There's my current team today, and there's a few students that have come and gone, so I usually have maybe plus or minus one or two students to this group. And, of course, there's a lot of effort that's gone on in the Hub Zero team to make all of this happen in a very successful way. So thank you to all of them. I'm going to close that saying my background started in mid-70s at the University of Illinois, and I took my freshman and sophomore physics courses using a system called Plato. And I later came to know a number of the programmers that are involved with that and the number of people who were actually developing courseware and stuff. And I did a little bit of programming myself and the language tutor at the time. I was amazed at the time at how much detail it took to produce a good piece of lessonware. And so we pay attention to those details. And I think the key to success of your of online content is paying attention to those details. And there are a lot of details. So with that, I'd like to now entertain some questions. And I'll put a little bit of advertising up for our NanoHub U courses, which are coming. I think I left that right on time, so we got 10 minutes of questions. Yes, sir.
We had about 1,500 items. Each of those represent about an hour lecture.
That really is pretty accurate, yes. Some of those represent an hour and a half lectures. So depending on when you're on a Tuesday, Thursday course schedule. By the way, Tuesday, Thursday course schedules are easy to record because they're an hour and a half long and you have two of them instead of three of them to deal with. but I'd say probably at least a 20 to 25% of that is probably hour and a half instead of hour long seminars. And, you know, we do have seminars that go long, instead of an hour, they're an hour and 15 minutes, but it's still a good rule of thumb. Just, you know, per item, as long as it's, you know, something around an hour, it's gonna be, 5 or 6 hours.
Has that changed at all? Has it gone up or down?
It really stays about the same because the details shift. You know, our production today looks a lot different than it looks back then. We spent a lot of time just trying to sync. You know, back when we started with Breeze, it took a long time because it was just literally a pain to synchronize the audio with the slides. And literally how we started was we had a camera and the computer was capturing in the audio as the guy was doing the play button, and then hopefully you didn't make a mistake marking the transition times as you're watching the little video on the camera screen go by. And
really automate, and it really is a human four and a half, 5 hours of human effort.
Well, part of it is getting the audio clean. So, you know, I'm going through allergy season right now. I didn't cough through this talk, but if I had done so, then we can see, you can see those visually when that happens, right? So it's just going through that audio and then fixing it up. We've removed a lot of coughs and things like that.
The,
yes, sir.
The software you showed in that slide is a NanoWin. You said it could be available to anybody?
Yes, that will be available to the committee. There is tomorrow a talk which will talk about the consumer side, but the same software that you download is the same production software we use for our stuff when it's used in concert with Final Cut. But it could be any video editing package, right? You could do it with Adobe, Avid, you know, Autodesk, Shake you could use, or Smoke rather. And get the same kind of effect. Now, our package is designed to work with the XML that comes out of Final Cut, so that's the only little caveat there that would have, that there's a different video editing package involved. But it's available through the NanoHub. You go to the resource and download it. I don't have it on today's thing, but it'll also be in tomorrow's notes if you can't make that presentation of the resource to go to. You go to, you download the installer and install it, and then it'll update through that NanoHub resource. So it's kind of like a real application where you just say, update me, and it'll check to see if there's an update and update you. So you don't have to be downloading and reinstalling it after you get it installed once.
So that software is Windows-based?
It is Windows-based, yes. Yep. Yes, sir.
You talked about your students and your role. Is it, you know, what part of this whole NanoHub thing, you know, are you involved? Are you just dedicated to the video and the online learning stuff, and then there are other people that are dedicated to maintaining the NanoHub?
Well, I kind of have two roles. I'm also the site lead for Purdue, and so I have that role involves, you know, some outreach to other people on campus working. I don't work with the tools. I work with mostly the curation of content, basically, in that role. And I'm the ombudsman to the rest of the site leads from the other universities. There's, I think, you know, if you counted them in the beginning there was 8 of them listed. So the other site leads often ask me questions and stuff that they're, the problems they're trying to solve. But at Purdue, I'm primarily curator of content that is not tools.
The reason I'm asking is someone starts up one of these and, you know, you spend a good chunk of money just getting in there, creating the hub, right? Your fees have gone up quite a bit. And so if they you know, say, well, we're going to give you so much money for students and so much money to be an administrator of that, how much time and how many resources are really required to do a good job, a justifiable job. And I know that this is this big scale up here, but someone starting.
Well, I've got a good sight seeing, but you could literally, especially if your school, I'm not sure where you're from.
Purdue Health Sciences.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I find students that can do the video editing and stuff and kind of manage them. It gets chaotic at times because they're coming and going and they're busy, but, their projects come up, right? And then they go offline for a while, right? but you'll see this really is happening here today. I have a camera set back in the back there taping my presentation. So the camera is about $4,000 and you know, the microphones are about $600. We buy that for the reliability. You could literally do this with a high-end consumer camera, which is where we actually started. But those consumer devices have small menus, lots of menus, little buttons that kind of don't always work when you push them and things like that. And, you know, you want to make sure you capture the content. And so you could start on the lower end and work your way up as things progress. It's all very doable. You don't have to start with a $5,000 investment in computer equipment. And you know the salary for students, so it's, you know, it's a good labor resource. I pay mine pretty well because I want them to be reliable.
These are undergraduates.
But, you know, I still have to compete with the food court guys, which pay them, you know, about half to three quarters of what I pay them because they give them free food, right? It's hard to replace that value.
These are undergraduates.
These are mostly undergraduates, yes. I've been getting more graduate students these days who are doing the work at just a little bit more than what I would pay an undergraduate student. Now, the nice thing about graduate students, especially if they're in your field, they understand the content when they edit it. Not necessarily a requirement, though.
How long usually it takes to train one student?
I recruit them from the computer graphics technology at Purdue and the film school. So they already know how to do video editing, nonlinear video editing. And I look for that. I don't care if they've done it on Premiere and stuff like that, because the rest is just learning the appropriate lower motor skills to, you know, switch to Final Cut. How are we doing on time here? We still got plenty of time. According to my watch, I'm not. All right.
What's next?
What's next? Yeah, for me or for the presentation?
No, for the project.
Well, we've been doing a lot of experimenting on how we're delivering the NanoHub U stuff. And, I mean, they don't quite like the, you know, I have a high overhead process, but especially, you know, if they're going to scale it up to more than, you know, one course going on at a time kind of thing, you start to parallel that, it doesn't, you know, it's difficult to scale that.
But in terms of the software, it mostly does what you want now? It's mostly...
For now, I got, you know, the big challenge, you know, Apple's not going to like this, but I don't know where to go beyond, you know, the prior version of Apple, because they've kind of changed the Final Cut thing. So I'm looking at things like Adobe Premiere now and Autodesk Smoke to figure out where I'm going to go in the future, because I can't buy licenses now for the version I'm running. And so it's not easy to add seats now. So I have three licenses basically running.
Source anything that does anything like it.
Yeah. Well, I suppose there's stuff that might approach it that's open source, but you know, do you value your time, I guess.
You're also working on the closed captioning.
Oh yeah. So we are. I should add that we do have a pretty good process we've worked on. We've worked out for doing actually now closed captioning. The AFM lectures were done. Closed caption. I don't think we have something that we could apply to everything that we produce. And it turns out the industry is about, was it 2.5 hours, I think, if I got that right, for every hour that they're producing, or I think it's between 2 and 5, right? I'm close to that 2.5 hour. So 2.5 hours for every hour of content production. So that's has worked out. And we've done that with one piece of software we bought and another piece that was free from the University of Wisconsin.
It automatically
transcribes the audio, and then we have to go correct the audio. And in the NanoHub U, and the really nice thing is you get a nice transcript of everything that was said. We haven't quite figured out how to use this yet, other than the instructors are thinking about it for their textbooks.
Full text search is huge if somebody's trying to watch live.
Yeah.
I don't know when it was, but yeah. If things are, of course, spelled right, then, the more technical it is, the worse that is.
We see that clearly the value that will add. We've figured out how to deal with it. So the process of that looks very simple. We do the translation from the audio that we recorded, and then you get a big blob of text, and now we go, we kind of review that, and we edit that in Word instead of using the tool, because it helps because the spelling checkers or things are going and stuff like that. We break that out into a paragraph per slide, and we fix the grammar. So if the guy said instead of and, things like that, we make that grammatically correct. If he kind of said the sentence grammatically incorrectly, we kind of leave that. So there's a little bit of editorial process of where that crosses over on that editing process. But a lot of people are using this for, have English as a second language more than we have people who are deaf using it.
We also provide translations to any other language.
Exactly. So we upload those onto YouTube as our translation, and then they can, I think, go to any other language from there. Exactly.
Who handles all the accounting for the people who register for these classes and so on? So I think, $30 or something to register? And so
Diane's an expert at that. we have processes for doing. We're now working with the conferences division at Purdue for the registration side.
So that's what you guys do?
Yeah. Now, the Rutger class stuff that I've put on there, the full semester courses that we've put on, I just go and we tape that. We're not charging for those. It's part of the NanoHub content.
You use Blackboard or something like that to manage it?
No, the hot seat for the forum. And then Eric is not here, but he's back there. There's a whole quizzing function we have.
We've got the CI hub and then we're applying it. It's separate from Blackboard. We're not going anywhere near that right now.
Me neither.
Okay.
We'll always be in the
forum. The courses? Or the full
section. When you referenced it, you said it was a NanoHub link to get to the numbers, but
For the tool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm NanoHub, right? I'm not Hub, really kind of Hub Zero, so it's on NanoHub. But there's nothing, it's not, protected in any way. You don't have to have an account to log in. It's just open.
Generates that can only go on
NanoHub. Exactly. Yeah.
And just be a resource anywhere.
It could be a resource anywhere. Exactly. Yep.